and welcome to episode 93 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about kingmaking, because everyone likes to be king or queen, but nobody likes to be kingmaker. So what kind of games lend themselves to kingmaking, and what should we do about it? Is that really bad, or is it just part of playing the game? We'll get to all of that. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and the SGC. And a special thanks to Sean Peck. You know what you did. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you. Yes. So lots and lots of stuff going on. First of all, we're a day late.
My bad.
Well, I'm not blaming anyone. It was a long weekend and schedules got all mixed up, but that's okay. It turned out just fine. Let's see. We have a winner to announce today. We have this just in. Actually, I'm going to do this one first. So Origins is in 2 weeks and Kitty won't be there.
Nope.
Josh will be there at some point. I don't think he's going to be there Wednesday, but he says he's going to either bus in or fly in at some point during the weekend. Sydney and I will be there, though, on Wednesday. And we are doing a little bit of a meetup at Origins Wednesday, 5:30 at the Hyatt Bar. So that is kind of the hotel that's connected to the convention center. It's one floor above the Hyatt lobby. And we'll be... Sydney and I will be wearing our Tabletop Game Talk t-shirts so you can recognize us. I think Anne's going to be there and possibly Steve and a few other people have mentioned coming out. So if you're going to be at Origins Wednesday, come hang out. We'll play games, eat food, drink beverages, and what have you. So, but many, many months later, we'll be doing Gen Con. We have a live show there Friday at 5. And possibly what we'll do is something similar, maybe after the live show, if you're still around, we'll go someplace Friday night. So more details on that as we get closer. And Kitty might be able to stay for that, maybe part of it?
Maybe. We'll see if Spencer can come hang out with Player 3.
Perfect. We have a winner to our Seventh Continent contest. So I think this one had the most entries so far, which is kind of cool. So we had over 440 entries.
My goodness.
I know, right? So that's a good number. And just in case you don't know, basically the way I do this is all the Patreons, they have their bonus entries, so they get stuck in a spreadsheet. And then I add all of the emails that came after that. They get stuck in a spreadsheet. I add up all the things based on the multiple of bonus entries and whatnot. Generate a random number. This time I had Google do it. I said, hey, Google, ooh, generate a random number between 1 and 440. And she spit out a number, and then I count down the entries. I do it with math. I don't actually do 1, 2, 3, 4. And the winner this time is Michael Ohl.
Congratulations, Michael.
Congratulations. So Michael's actually been a contributor to the show for, well, it seems like forever at this point.
I know.
He sent me an email at a little while ago saying like he's kind of an honorary host, which I would agree. Mm-hmm. So
much feedback. We love it.
Yep. And he has feedback in this episode, too. So of feedback course. Or input. I think more input than feedback. But so congratulations, Michael. I do not have a new contest starting just yet. It will be next week. I will let you know what that will be. Right now, I have absolutely no idea, but I will come up with something cool. Let's see. Any other announcements? I don't think so, actually. All right, so let's go right into feedback.
All right, so let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com or go to Board Game Geek forums found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. All right, so first up is from Tom Ray. Josh, do not accept Chris's challenge to buy a Kickstarter game. I'm a pretty avid game player.
So last week was our Kickstarter episode with Josh. And at the very end, I said, okay, Josh, you're doing Kickstarter with me next week. You have to buy a game before that episode starts. So Tom's trying to put the brakes on that.
Oh, no. I'll keep reading, though.
Okay.
So Tom says, I'm a pretty avid game player and own about 100 games. I've never backed on Kickstarter and probably never will back a Kickstarter. Probably 50% of my game collection has been played 3 times or less. It sounds like Chris's number is much higher. 2 friends in my game group have many more games than I do, and they are avid Kickstarter backers. Between the two of them, their Kickstarter games get played an average less than 1 time. Why should I contribute to that metric by piling on more Kickstarter games that will not get played? And why should you contribute to Chris's low play count metric? Something to think about.
Wow. I get the feeling that Tom's anti-Kickstarter. So I have
I don't know where you would have gotten that idea.
I have 2 answers to you, Tom. 1, FOMO, fear of missing out on something awesome. And 2, Kickstarter games have so many minis. So even if I don't play them, I have all these minis in boxes that are alone in the dark and usually in some kind of shrinking wrap tray.
I really hope that it's not like Toy Story, that your minis aren't just like the saddest little toys ever looking out of their plastic like the Prospector.
You know something? I could, if I had any kind of animation ability, I would totally do that. I have this like vision of, I want to do an animated YouTube series about the characters of the board game playing the board game. So as the characters run around, like basically, that's stop motion, I guess. So they're like going around and they have voices and they're trying to do what they're doing in the game. And I really wish I had some talent to be able to do that. So if anyone has that talent and you want to collaborate, I'm totally have all kinds of ideas. But Tom, I actually do think this is a valid point. Kickstarter can be addicting. And if you're not buying games to play them, what are you buying them for? Personally, I buy them. I like playing games, obviously. But I don't always buy Kickstarters just so I can like have the greatest game in the world. Sometimes games are just so cool looking that I think of them as pieces of art and collectibles. So even if I don't play it, I like that I have it. It's not a good habit. I shouldn't get anyone into it. I know a few of our listeners have already done that, and I apologize. But
and me. Thanks and a lot. You.
Yeah.
But you like my second Kickstarter for our last first
one,
episode.
Yeah, the first one turned out really well, though. That was like a fun
it
game.
It did. Although I still haven't played 2 of the games that came with it.
Well, those were free, basically.
No, they weren't. I paid for them. But still, I will play them at some point.
All right. Well, maybe you'll have to get them played so you can do a review in our Kickstarter episode. Oh, that's an announcement I didn't even mention. So we no longer do Kickstarter in this episode. In our normal episodes, they have their own episodes, which come out on Friday. And last week I said Thursday, but I decided to do Friday because it's just easier to do a Tuesday-Friday cadence. But, you know. So, yeah, you can use it as a review for one of those. All right. We have some feedback from Steve on Board Game Geek about our iconography episode and terraforming Mars. Steve is not happy with me. This is a trend in this episode. It's going to be subtitled, We're Not Happy With You, Chris. So, Steve says, I think your comment about not liking terraforming Mars, having both iconography and text is unfair. Race for the Galaxy has a huge barrier to entry because it's only has iconography. Trying to get someone to play it for the first time is a nightmare. He goes, I've played Terraforming Mars with people who have never played anything before, anything more complicated than Catan, and teaching the game was quick. They didn't need to learn the symbols. They could use the text, but once they were more familiar, they could just use the symbols. He goes on talking about the iconography, like the brown borders are kind of intuitive. It matches the symbols. The only really thing that's confusing is upper left is purchase, upper right is type. Steve, I completely agree with you. I may have been a little bit harsh on Terraforming Mars. I think, honestly, and for me, it's the aesthetic of the art in general in Terraforming Mars that pushes me off. Now, in fairness, it is a hard game to learn from the rule book because if you have someone there teaching you and they can point the iconography, this is what this means, this is what this means, it's easier to pick up. And I can teach Terraforming Mars very quickly. I would never have a fear. Kitty, you taught Terraforming Mars, didn't you?
Yes. And I had a very hard time because I hadn't played the game recently enough to remember how it went. And I will say it's not because of the text or the iconography. It was more because the layout of the rule book it wasn't conducive to reference on the spot. You really have to like read it back to front a few times and then go online and watch some videos and get some help from YouTube friends.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, once you know the game, it is an easy game to play.
It is easy to go forward. Yeah. It's true.
And the icons make complete sense because you know which ones are important for purchase costs. You know which ones are referencing points. So it just takes a play to kind of get that through. So, Steve, I didn't mean to be as hard on Terraforming Mars. Also, I really shouldn't be so hard.
I don't take anything back.
You wouldn't. All right, let's move on to someone who said something nice about us.
All right, this is from Robert Doolin. I just wanted to say that my family and I went on a long drive one weekend and we put on your D&D side chat episode. We loved listening to the playthrough. My children are 7 and 9 and we're talking about what they would do. We had purchased the 5th edition starter set and struggled, but now I think we will get it going with some friends. It sounded like so much fun, so I have passed on the podcast to them to listen to. My children wanted to hear what happened next, but I said, that's it for now. After the aww, they told me that they hoped you would continue the story. It was like having a talking adventure book on in the car. Fantastic, and I just wanted to say thanks. Robert from South Australia.
Wow. Robert, thank you. Kids, sorry. We have been talking about doing a D&D actual play. If we did it, obviously it'd be in a separate feed. We haven't sorted out when we would do that or how that would work or, you know, it probably won't continue with the story that we started with. That was more for getting families to kind of get the feel of how D&D works. So if you play a session, I take full credit for it and you're welcome. But I will keep you posted. Right now, it's kind of crazy. Convention season's coming up, summer stuff and such. But I think everyone at the table really wants to play again, and we want to figure out a way to make that happen. So we will do our best to do that. Let's see. Lance had a quick question about the Arcadia Quest Kickstarter. He says, is Arcadia Quest Riders and the base game enough without the expansions? And I was going to answer you directly, Lance, but I figured I wanted to use this as an excuse to talk about that Kickstarter very quickly as well. So Arcadia Quest Riders was a flash Kickstarter by Cool Mini or Not. So it ran Monday through Friday of last week. And it raised about $300,000, which is a decent amount of money for pretty much any board game project. For Cool Mini or Not, it's not that great. Typically, they're in the $3 million plus range, but that's for like base games and bunches of Kickstarter exclusives and extras and all that kind of stuff. I'm looking forward to this expansion. The Kickstarter left me ho-hummish. I wasn't really all that thrilled with, okay, here's everything you get, and it's just a one pledge, and we're over in 5 days, and there's no hype or hoopla. And it kind of made me realize that I need the hype and hoopla. I like the excitement. And I knew I was going to back it because I love the game. But any other game that tried doing that, if it was a 5-day thing, I'd be like, eh, whatever, let it go. So I think they're from the Cool Mini or Not side. And I still say Cool Mini or Not because CMON is apparently harder for me to say. But from the CMON side, they're like, well, you get this big boost at the beginning and you get this big boost at the end, so let's just cut out the middle. But I think you get that big boost at the end because there's tons of people that are coming and marking it as, you know, save it in their favorites or watch this. And you get to watch that hype. And as that hype builds, more and more people are watching it. And that's why when that 48 hours left to back email comes out, you get this huge spike. So I don't know that there was a lot of hype for this, and it just kind of, like I say, it's like, eh, it's all right. The expansion looks great. I can't wait to play it. It's just the Kickstarter itself, this whole idea of a 5-day Kickstarter, didn't really do it for me. So, and Kitty, you have yet to play Arcadia Quest, so you have nothing to say about this.
Nothing.
Oh, also, I haven't answered Lance's question at all.
I was going to point that out. I was just waiting for you to wrap up.
So, yes, I think the base box of Arcadia Quest and Riders would be more than enough. And you asked which one would you get. So there's two base boxes. There's the base box, the original one, which is just Arcadia Quest. And then there's Arcadia Quest Inferno. I like the Inferno one better because it has these cards that you can get to play where you can kind of take control of the monsters and kind of mess with your opponents a little bit more. The base box does not have that. That's pretty much the only difference between them. There's a little bit more interaction with, like, you know, they have damnation tokens. So it gives you, as you, you know, fight different demons and stuff, these tokens can come into play. Inferno just has a little bit more meat there, although I love them both. And so I'd get, if you had to choose, I would say if you're only going to do one, get Inferno. If you're going to do the first one, then it might be worth getting Beyond the Grave, which adds those extra monster cards in there, plus adds another campaign. It's kind of a big box expansion to the first one. So also pets is amazing because they have cute little pets. So maybe just get them all, although Lance said he's not getting them all. So my recommendation would be get either Inferno or the base. Inferno is probably a better one. And play that. And if you like that, then go out and get everything else. All right. Now we can go on topic.
In this episode, we're talking about kingmaking. No, we're not talking about checkers. We're talking about a situation where one player can't win, but they can choose who of the remaining players does win. In other words, they make that player the king. And depending on your group, this can be a fun jab, just part of the normal night, or a table flipping moment.
Yeah, so I really like the input on this one from BGG. There was a lot of really interesting things from, and actually we got an email too. So we have the whole range here. But I think I should define kingmaking first. So we kind of just did, but really what we're talking about today is a situation where maybe you're playing, Risk is a bad example because you can actually come back in Risk, but let's just use as an example for the moment. You're playing a three-player game and two people are, obviously, they're everywhere. They have everything. And you have Australia, because that's where I kind of bunker up is Australia. I always have Australia. Now, I can go north. Actually, I think Australia can only really go north. But imagine I can go two different places. I can attack Kitty.
You're in South America. You can go to North America or you can go to Africa.
There we go. So I can attack Kitty or I can attack Josh. Or I can attempt to just do, you know, kind of move out and do something that's better for me, which is kind of a mixed thing between the two of them, right? So I'm going to take a little bit of Kitty's out, I'm going to take a little bit of Josh's out, and I've kind of made some headway into Europe. I know I'm not going to win. And maybe I'm angry about this, maybe I'm annoyed, maybe I want the game to end. There's any number of reasons. And, you know, Kitty's just been, irking me this entire game. So I am just going to go straight to her, wipe her out to the point where, like, she's practically has nothing left. So when Josh comes in, he can just walk over and take everything and win the game because I've also left myself defenseless at the same time. That's the most kind of blatant example of this. There are shades to this, but that is kind of, that's what I'm talking about here on the extreme. Anything to add?
I think that's a pretty good definition where one player has no chance of winning. So they do something that makes another player win directly.
Right.
I would say with intention.
Yes. I think the intention's the important part. So I had a list of bullet points here, and I want to make sure that we talk about them. But I really kind of want to jump to the input first because I think a lot of my bullet points are going to be covered in these kind of anecdotal areas. And I want to start out with Ashton. So a few episodes ago, we talked about a Scythe game where we had competitive player and non-competitive player. And there was some table talk going on that caused one person to stop another person from winning the game. Well, the person who was stopped from winning the game emailed us on this particular subject. So Ashton says, Ashton here, aka competitive friend. First, thanks for the podcast. I'm a new listener and have really enjoyed working my way through the past episodes, though I have a lot more to listen to. You should start at 1 and work your way forward. Actually, you can start at 4 and work your way forward because he wasn't on episodes 1, 2, and 3. But that's just general good advice for everybody, I think. He continues, I think kingmaking is always legal. If you are playing with your siblings, there is too much shared history for it not to be part of the game. I'm the oldest of five boys, and that combined with my playing style being fairly aggressive has led me my brother's goal to being one of two things. I want to win, and anyone can win but Ashton. I have learned to accept it and see it as a challenge. With my regular gaming group, though, I would have a different opinion. So I think this is the most positive thing we can say about kingmaking. And I want to kind of think about this a little bit. So you have three siblings.
I do.
Do you have this kind of thing going on where it's like you're kind of out for each other?
I definitely think that I can play more all out competitive with my siblings because there's no like, I'm not going to be your sister anymore. Like that's not a thing. There's no choice there. You have to deal with each other. And especially, you know, we've got that shared history of growing up together. You know, you had to see each other all day. You know, they were going to be there when you woke up in the morning. There's none of this, like, I'm not speaking. I mean, there was some of that. I'm not speaking to you. But not the same as, like, with a friend where you can really actually cut them out of your life. So I do think, you know, there's a bit more competitiveness, a bit more rambunctious play between us.
So would even Jack, like, gang up on you? You guys are playing a heated game of Risk, and it's like, okay, we can't let Kitty win. She's won the last three games. We have to, like, take her out.
Yes. A lot. and then they wouldn't really care who won between them. Like, it was more about beating me, though. So I'm not sure if it was a kingmaker situation, but like a crown, like a dethroning situation.
So is that similar? I mean, it's kind of, it's all right. So you have two like players. You have two players, like, two, and they're attacking you. Right. Because if I am making sure that you can't win, and I don't care if I win, like, me or my sibling can win, sibling A, sibling B. We'll use Eve, Jack, and Kitty. So Eve and Jack don't care which one of them win, as long as it's not Kitty. But in a way, they are making the other person the winner. They could win as well, but they're making sure that either the other person wins, as long as Kitty doesn't win. They're not really trying for themselves. And I think that kind of still qualifies for this. You're like, I don't care if I win as long as this person loses.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, usually that mentality starts when you feel like you can't win. Like, if they had a chance to win, it doesn't feel like I'm stopping Kitty from winning. You feel like I'm winning. I'm doing this to win. And I think that's what I still try to do in these situations, where if I am in a kingmaker situation, I don't think, who am I picking to win? I'm thinking, even if I can't win, what's the best move for my situation?
Yes. And for most players, especially the ones that we have feedback from, that is the situation. But I want to touch on something where you said, this comes out when you think you can't win, which in the whole three sibling scenario, they feel like they can't win against you because you are always winning. So they are actively taking, you know, moves in the game to make sure you are always the person that's in the lowest on that competitive totem pole. So I don't know. I kind of, this still feels like a king make-ish situation.
Yeah.
Now, not every game lends itself to this. So again, I've been using Risk as an example, and the way Risk plays, it's not the greatest example, because as long as you can get like those 30 troops at the end, you can still come back from just about anything, which might actually be a pretty good, you know, that'll be a segue later. But the types of games that really lend themselves to kingmaking are these free-for-all style games, where you're not all having the same goal. As in, I'm trying to get to the end of the racetrack first, or I need this many points first. It's a free-for-all. And if I do something, it's going to negatively impact somebody else. Those types of games can lend themselves to kingmaking. And it's not the games where you know, action or worker placement. I go here so you can't. Usually I'm going to place my worker where it benefits me most. So that actually helps. But I could invade this territory or I could invade that territory. This territory is going to be easy, but it's not going to screw Kitty over as much. So I'm going to invade that territory, which is really going to mess her up. And I didn't need to do that, but that's what I'm doing. Uh-oh, this territory, this first one, now I've given, you know, Anne like full reign over that, and she can come in and take all that over. So by messing Kitty up, I basically gave Anne a huge boost. All the while not thinking of my optimal move. I'm just trying to do something to mess you up. So anyway,
I think the games that really lend themselves to this are games where you're playing to a set number of points and everyone can see how many points everyone has.
Oh, yes. Keep going.
So see, things like Settlers, where it's the first person to get so many victory points. And I think it's Terrence pointed this out. He says, the first player to 9 out of 10 points rarely wins the game. All the other players would turn on the lead player with the robber placement, or they would, what would do the most damage, crippling trade embargoes, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So it's where you see like, oh man, if they get this one more thing, they're going to win. So even though I can't win, I'm going to spend all of my wood and bricks and I'm going to build as many roads so I can take their longest road, and now they can't win. And I may have stopped myself from building another settlement or something, but now, you know, they're not going to win on their next turn.
So now, is that really kingmaking? Because Michael actually has an example here about playing Munchkin with his 13-year-old. And what Munchkin really is it's like the stereotypical, it's a poster child for take that games, where you know who's in first. Like, Munchkin's a similar situation where you're trying to get to level 10 before anybody else gets to level 10. And you do this by making deals with each other. And sometimes you can be helping people, and sometimes you can say you're going to help them, but you're really helping the monster instead, or you're knocking them down. And this is what I kind of think of as more of like a King of the Hill type of thing. Whoever's at top, everybody's attacking that person. I don't know if that is actually kingmaking or not. Anne actually mentioned that, where this doesn't really sound like kingmaking because the game is designed for you to chase the leader. The leader is the person that is going to be like the target of everything.
That's true. I don't know.
So now what could be kingmaking, if you look at a game of Catan, is I can decide to build my road in front of two different places. If I build it, you know, and it doesn't really matter where I build it. And the only reason I'm building a road is because I happen to have some extra brick and I'm out of this game anyway. You guys both have 9 points. And if I build my road here, you can't get the longest road. So you're not going to take it back and you're not going to win. If I build it over here, then nobody's going to benefit. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just building a road because I want to do something in this darn game that I haven't been able to do anything in. So that would be a kingmaking situation in Catan.
True.
I don't know. I don't want to, it's tricky because I don't want to like just kind of split hairs in this. I think all of this is related and none of it's really discounted. I just think hopefully you can see the difference between trying to stop the person with 9 points from winning and trying to say, well, I'm not going to win anyway, so whatever, let's get this game over.
Okay, so I'm going to describe a situation because I can't remember it very well. And I was trying to think of the last time I was in one of these like actual king-making situations. And I think this was it. Was we were playing a game where everyone has like their own race, and there's like a million race cards, like, and it's a space game, and there's a lot of bartering.
Cosmic Encounters.
Okay, so we're playing Cosmic Encounters, and it was you, me, Chris, or you, me, Spencer, and Sydney.
Yep.
And there's some sort of mechanic in that game where somebody can really actually let someone win.
Yes.
And Sydney gave me the win over you.
Yes. So that is kingmaking. And that's exactly it, too. So in that situation, it was I think we were attacking her or something along those lines.
Yes.
And if you defend, you get cards. And if you attack, you actually get a base. So I think I was attacking and I would have gotten my fourth colony. You need five colonies to win. And then my next colony would have been easier to get. And instead of letting me win, she let you ally to a point where you had a base. Or maybe she was attacking because I think that's how that worked. But in any case, making that decision to let you ally won you the game. Now, notable on that game, though, is you can have ties. So sometimes it's actually okay to say, okay, you can ally with me because then we're both going to get a base and then we will tie.
And I think that's what happened. No, I think I actually won.
I think you actually won in that one.
Yeah.
Sydney will let me know it tomorrow when she's listening to this, and she'll text me in real time.
She has a better memory than either of us.
But I do remember that situation, and that's another game where it's like, okay, out of spite, I can choose for this other thing to happen. So
I think spouses fall right into that siblings category of I'm not going to let them win.
Yeah. Well, and I think that actually kind of goes back to what Ashton was saying is like when you're playing with your family, it's still a fine line. If you're playing with your family and it's always a spite game, you're probably not going to want to keep playing with them, or at least not those kinds of games.
Yeah.
Go to two-player dueling games where that's the whole idea is just kind of, you know, destroy each other. But if you're outside, if you're just playing with a normal group, I think you have to be a little bit more, yeah, just you have to be careful when you're doing those types of things.
Just be diplomatic.
Yeah. I like Anne's response to this, though. Her term, she says, I hate kingmaking. Flip the table level of hate. So for her, she'd rather compete for third or come in like with the best score that she can as opposed to letting somebody win. But she figures if you do have to have, you know, if you have to choose somebody that you're going to essentially help win the game, it should be for in-game reasons, not out-of-game reasons.
Yes.
And I think Steve actually made the same point. He's like, thinks that kingmaking is part of most games. Something you do will affect other people, which is sort of true. I think if you're playing a game long-term, though, that'll kind of even itself out. But if I'm always ganging up on one person because I just want that person to lose, I am kingmaking in that situation. But he basically says the game should influence who you affect and how you attack them. So someone attacks you in turn one and it's the last turn and you have two people to choose from, maybe that's time for payback from turn one. Hey, you put me at a disadvantage. You're the reason I'm in this situation, so I'm going to take you out and other players going to win.
Okay, so a situation where I think it might be beneficial to let somebody win or make somebody the king for out of game reasons. If it is their first night at your game group, it's their first time playing games, you're trying to get them into the hobby, give them the win.
Okay.
If it's an experienced player and somebody who's completely inexperienced, do you give them the win?
So this is hard. Because do you want to teach this kind of behavior out of the gate where it's like, okay, when you're in this situation, you should just choose who's going to win the game. Yeah, I would say, you know, in a way, I don't disagree. Like, especially if you're bringing in new gamers, you want them to have fun. And just destroying them is not necessarily fun for anyone. In a way, being in that kingmaker position can be a way of evening out the experienced and inexperienced thing. So again, I'm playing with Josh and Kitty, and Kitty really knows this game. It's her favorite game, and Josh it's his first time playing. In that particular case, I may go a little bit harder at Kitty because it's more or less it evens things out, even though what I'm doing is actually making things easier for Josh. And not anyone else, but an experienced player in that position, I would be accelerating them to win in that situation. So, all right, you have a point. I can see it. I'm interested to see what the listeners think. Is it okay to attack one player so the newer player has a better chance of winning. In this very specific scenario, it's a new person, you know, and you want them to have a good time or at least not get crushed. Is it all right to attack one person otherwise? There's another piece of information, or not information, but input from Michael. So he said in Power Grid, his strategy in Power Grid, and if you haven't played Power Grid is... it's kind of a math game, but with pretty pictures of powers and resources. It's a Euro game where you're trying to build power plants in all these different cities. And
kind
insert
of are finding paths through a map.
Yes.
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah. And in different stages of the game, you can have either one power plant. I don't think it's power plants in their houses or whatever. But anyway, you can have one, two, or three in the cities. But you have to wait till stage two before you can have two, and stage three before you can have three. So if there's already a power plant there, you can't build your own there. So you have to like go to the next city. And every time you go a further distance away, it costs you more money to build that power plant.
Usually a lot more money.
Usually a lot more money. So his strategy is often to build a long route through the entire map, like just kind of keep trailing it together as opposed to building up in a cluster. And what that can do is it creates other players that are around you have to spend more because now they have to pay to cross your city because they can't build in that city. Oftentimes, especially when you have four players, you're messing up with, you know, your neighbors are getting messed up, but the one person who's not is able to get a little bit faster. So that kind of play could be kingmakish type play. But in this case, he's not actually trying to be a kingmaker. It's just a strategy that's worked for him before, so he continues to use it.
And I don't know that it's kingmaking in the true sense of the definition, where it's, I feel like the real kingmaking is it's the last move of the game, basically.
Yes.
Or like the last round, last turn. So yeah, you know, play in that style might result in somebody winning or losing. Maybe it's not really kingmaking.
Now, funny you should mention that because it triggered a memory. The very first time I played Power Grid. Now, you and I have played this recently, and we'll talk about this on a future episode. But the very first time I played it was the last time I played it until we played recently. Because of a kingmaker situation. Apparently, I was the kingmaker in this situation. So what ended up happening was I was new to the game. I wasn't really sure what was going on. And the person who brought it to the meetup like was obviously very much loved this game. So as he's going through, he's optimizing every single move. And I'm just kind of like being like, I can afford to build. Okay, I can build there. I can build there. Oh, coal looks cool. That's cheap. I'll buy that. And the very last round of the game in Power Grid, nothing... you don't get any points during the game. It's just how many power plants you can power at the end of the game, which gives you your final score. And I'm just kind of, you know, I'm like at the end of the game, I'm not playing in a way to affect anybody. But apparently what I did is I picked up a certain resource that he needed to be able to power his power plants. And because I did that, one of the other people won the game. And he was irate. He was so upset. He's like, that move made no sense for you. It was a completely suboptimal move. Why would you ever even think of doing that? And my response was, I don't know. It just seemed like the right thing to do at the time. So I was an inadvertent kingmaker. He was playing the perfect game. Everything that he was doing was working if you were a logical player playing against him. I think that's okay, though. I felt good about it because he got so upset.
So this leads me to one of my favorite moves when I'm in the kingmaker situation. Be the wild card. Like, if you have a choice between, like, there's only two moves you can make and one of them's going to let one player win, one of them lets the other, that's like, you have to make a decision.
Right.
But a lot of these are just like, I'm going to affect something. And it might affect one person in one way and one person in another. I want to do the move that's like, who knows what's going to happen if I do this? Like, throwing it out like the craziest thing I can think of.
I like
and
that.
And I think that's more fun.
Yeah, I like that. Instead of like, you know, putting one person or the other at an advantage, do something
I
that
put
puts
you
them
all at a disadvantage.
So now you're just like chaos maker, really.
Yes.
Which is still better than kingmaker.
Definitely.
So I think on that note, Corey actually has a pretty good summary of like how, what he thinks of this. He's like, in the end, really what we're talking about is sportsmanship. So if you're playing with good sportsmanship, this becomes less of an issue. Now, he takes it a little bit further than I would. So he says, if we employ this, then games like Munchkin or Innis, or, and I always say Innis, but I think it's Innish. Innish?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I'm, anyway, I'm saying it wrong. Katie.
Yeah. It's spelled I-N-I-S, but I think it's Innish. Or Cosmic Encounters or Settlers of Catan, they don't have to be very long. You don't have to draw them out in the end game. If you recognize that you're not going to win, but Chris, for example, I like his example, is going to win and played well enough to win for sure, then I don't need to go after him explicitly and try to pressure Kitty and Josh to drag him down and, you know, back off the winning path. Maybe I take one try to give it my best shot to turn the tables, but then I applaud a game well played and maybe propose a reset and replay while everyone's still on a gaming high. We haven't wasted much time in the end game drudgery. Now, I like the concept here. Honestly, I feel that all games, like, it's kind of this poor winner, poor loser thing. Poor losers, like the guy I played in Power Grid, I actually don't care about poor losers. They entertain me more than anything else. And that might be mean, but if you get all upset because you lost a game, you're not the kind of person I want to play a game with anyway. So I don't actually mind that. Poor winners, though, can be just as bad.
So true.
And they can cause the king-making phenomenon, because now I just played against Kitty and she just gloated so hardcore. So the next time I play this against her, yes, exactly. The next time I play this game with her, I'm just going to be out to get her and I don't care what else happens. She's just, you know, she's terrible when she wins and I just want to make sure she can't win. So I do think that if we're just all good sportsmen or board gamesmen, boards games people, I don't know. If we just remember it's a game and it's fun, I think we can probably circumvent all of this hassle. But I don't think I would end a game early just because it's like, okay, Kitty's going to obviously win. I do want to play it out, but I don't think you need to drag it out, if that makes sense.
It's true. A lot of games do try to give you like those catch-up mechanics, those like big moves that, you know, you want to stay in the game to see, like, maybe I can get there. If you really feel like you're that far behind, like, I guess, yeah, maybe just let it end, because are you even having fun at that point? Like, just let it go, try again. So yeah. I don't know how I feel.
Well, so Anne actually had another follow-up. So she was playing a game of Manhattan Project 2. And at the end of that game, they had a conversation about kingmaking because one of the players, actually, I'll just read this. We did have a quick discussion about kingmaking at the table because one player was really far behind at one point. He nearly gave up trying to win, but the rest of us encouraged him to continue to play as if he could win. He ended up with a very strong fourth and fifth scoring round and made up enough ground to come in second, missing first by only a few points. So that's another thing where this kind of goes to sportsmanship more than kingmaking, because kingmaking can come out of a feeling of I can't win, so I'm just going to do whatever. I'm going to be that chaos player. And honestly, we could do an entire episode on chaos players. We'll just mix it into here. There is good chaos and bad chaos. I think that the kingmaker and the chaos player in my mind, though, is the one who during the entire game is just doing random whatever. They're just there to mess up everyone else's game. I think your situation of I'm in a king-making situation, I'm just going to do something random, I think that's an appropriate use of chaos.
Yes.
So.
You can go too far, though.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think in this, like, telling somebody, it's like, oh, I'm out of this, I can't possibly win. And you see this a lot in point salad games or Euro games with point tracks. Yeah. Where people are like, I can't win this. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I can't figure this out. I'm not going to win. It's like, okay, but try to get through it so you can learn from this.
Also, a lot of these games, you have no idea sometimes. You know, maybe the strategy you're using doesn't look like much on the point track, like Carcassonne. Whenever you take your guy back, you move your points forward. Maybe you have a farmer heavy strategy. Those guys don't come out and don't score till the end. You could have so many points lying there on the board and look so far behind.
Yeah. Well, and then a lot of games that have the hidden points, you know, yeah. You have hidden goals or something. You might think that, well, I've only hit two of my three goals. Well, no one else has gotten any of their goals.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just don't know that. So I think this don't encouragement.
Don't count yourself out.
Exactly. You know, even when you're in a situation where it's like, I don't think I can lose. I don't think I can win. I don't think there's nothing I can do. It's like, okay. But at the same time, try, because you're going to learn from it. And maybe you'll surprise yourself. Now, it's still that last turn thing that can be, it's fairly obvious. The very last turn, everything's on the board. I know I'm not going to be able to score. But if I go here, Kitty's not going to be able to score either. That's still going to be a king-making situation. And at that point, I guess...
Just go hide in the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's like, they'll give up after 20 minutes.
Yeah. I'm just not going to do anything because whatever I do, you guys are going to hate me for it. Sportsmanship. I like the sportsmanship thing. All right. So what about going out and this is all right. This is kind of a confession for me. Sydney and I were playing in a board game tournament at last year's Dice Tower Con, I think. And the winner of the tournament would win a copy of the game. Now, it was, I think, a 3-table tournament or 4-table tournament, and it was a 4-player game. And we started out at different tables, but we both won and ended up at the final table. Now, in this particular situation, Sydney was playing exactly as she should, and I was expecting her to play differently because there was a prize on the line. I'm like, okay, we're both in this. It doesn't matter which one of us wins, as long as one of us wins. But
this is so typical of you and Sydney.
But
she's Sydney's playing by the rules, being the goody two shoes. And
well, so her thing was, I want to win, and Chris is in the best position right now, so I am going to attack him, and I'm just going to focus on taking him out. And
because she's a good person.
Good. She was a good, yes, fine. I was like, what are you doing? This makes no sense. We're in this for like to win a prize. Typically, I don't care if I win or lose, but I'm going to win a prize right here. And I was getting upset for no real reason, simply because she was not making me the king. And that to me would just seem like illogical in that situation. Now, looking back, and kids, if you're listening, that is not the way you win. That's actually called cheating. Don't do it.
Way to go, Sydney. Way to stick to your guns.
Exactly. Be a good
player.
Well, what really impressed
sportsmanship.
Well, what really impressed me is afterwards, I was talking to her. I'm like, well, why did you do that? Like, either of us could have won. It wouldn't have really mattered. And she's like, I didn't even think of that. I just wanted to win. And I'm like,
she always makes the best moves.
Yeah. I could not argue with that. It was a lesson learned. I'm just like, two lessons, actually. One, okay, she's morally better than I am. Two, I should never play competitive games where there's a prize on the line because I get actually competitive in those situations.
I think it's especially funny because it was probably a prize you could go and buy, right?
Oh, yeah. We bought two copies. I gave one away on the show. And I would have bought it anyway. And it's just,
I know.
Yeah. To Tom's point, though, I have not played the game again since we got back from the con, even though I really liked it. I bought two copies. Actually, I think we ended up winning a copy. I actually ended up winning because I'm like, all right, fine. I'm just going to play harder and actually win this game. And then I bought a copy, but I haven't played the one I won. But what about in games where you make a real... So that's kind of like the tournament play. And I think... Do we agree that that's probably more on the lines of cheating than king-making? Like, king-making in a tournament.
Well, and it comes down to that thing where if it's, I'm just going to let someone win. Like, you know, it's a multiple turn kind of thing. But, you know, like those true king-making situations, I can imagine in a competition... That's really hard where you don't get to move on and you're looking at two people you probably don't even know and you have to decide. Ugh.
Well, I mean, that's okay. Like, okay, two people I don't know. It's like, look, I'm sorry, I have to do this to someone, so I'm just going to do this. But when it's like, when you're on the outside of that, imagine you were the other two players besides Sydney and I, and they had seen Sydney do things where she was just completely leaving me alone, but only attacking them. That's where it's like,
that's cheating.
Yes. That's where I'm like, okay, I am a jerk for thinking that that should have even been the strategy. Because if I was on the outside of that, and I've seen that happen before where friends will play together and it's like, okay, well, we'll both collude to win and then split the prize.
Yeah.
And I think that is, and it's really hard to control because a lot of these game tournaments have a very small number of people. But I think in that situation, it is worth kind of pointing out at the time, like, look, I understand that you guys know each other, but if you're going to be teaming up like that, that's not cool. And just calling them out in the moment.
Yep.
And I would have said, yes, you're right. I will throw the game and you can have it. And I will buy you a copy as well because both of you deserve a game. And then I'll buy two more copies and give one away on the podcast and put the other one on my shelf that I'll never play again. Stop judging me, Tom. Tom, you're going to be my go-to judgy person from now on. So don't take any offense to it. Your points were very, very valid. All right. One other situation I wanted to talk about. You're in a game where the early game matters so much that if you mess up the early game, you really have little to no chance of winning. In that situation, like, what do you do there, right? So Catan's a good example of this, but this is more of an inexperienced thing where, you know, I just picked two places that were really bad. I've gotten myself in a bad situation. I'm not going to win. So let's... Actually, that's a great example because I think it's more common. I was going to use Terra Mystica as another example. It's a game where you only have limited moves, and the first couple opening moves can just catastrophically destroy you if you don't do the right move with some of the races that you can play there. How do you handle a situation like that? Like, you made some bad moves. You're going to be playing a two-hour game with no chance of winning.
Old Kitty would... flip the table and pout. New Kitty. You have to just try to think of it as a learning experience. Like, yeah, like, you know, recognize that it was your choices that brought you to that spot. It wasn't somebody else at the table. It wasn't, you know, like, oh, if you hadn't done that to me, you know, take responsibility and just, I think, you know, the sportsmanship thing. Just try to play the best game you can from that circumstance going forward. Try to get your best score. You know you're not going to win, but do the move that's still the best for you, not what's best for the person sitting to your left who's like egging you on or whatever it is. Just, you know, take a deep breath, learn. Grab the rule book, maybe read while everyone else is playing because you don't need to pay too much attention anymore. But, you know, pay enough attention to know, you know, what moves you want to make.
Yeah. And this doesn't happen a lot, especially if you're playing with a equal experienced group.
Yeah.
But there are games out there where, you know, there's some games that you play five rounds and you're done. So if your first two rounds you were trying to do something and it just didn't pan out, the last three rounds don't matter. Right. There's really nothing you can do to catch up. And
that's where those wild card moves are so much fun, though.
Yeah.
Like, what happens if I do this? Don't say like, you know, oh, I'm going to do this wild card move and mess someone up or like do this. Just be like, hey, I want to see what happens if I just like I'm going rogue. I'm doing my own thing. Maybe I'm not playing to win anymore, but I'm also not, you know, interfering, but maybe that messes up somebody's like who this is how I expect the game to play, kills their strategy.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually something you could do as long as you're doing it equally. It's like, okay, I see that you're going for longest road there and you're going for biggest army. So my goal is just going to stop you from getting biggest army and stop you from getting longest road. And that is my win condition. But I'm going to make sure that you guys just have to win a different way because, you know, whatever the case is. I don't know. There's not a lot of good situations there.
It's true. But it's fun. I think sometimes it can be a fun situation if you have the right attitude. Don't sulk. Don't pout. I've been there. It's more fun to, you know, like, just see what you can do.
Yeah.
See, well, like, you know, also tell yourself, like, hey, yeah, those were my worst two rounds. See, like, maybe I can't get 9 points, but, you know, let's see if I can get 7.
Yeah.
7's going to be my new win condition. I want to see if I can get there.
Yeah. Let me see if I can just get out of this out of nowhere. You know, or just, you know, I can't get 10, but yeah, I want to get something. Here's my new goal.
Turn it into like a personal puzzle.
Yep. Now, one last thing. This is honestly the last thing. In negotiation games. So I'll use Rising Sun. So Rising Sun is a game that you actually have alliances that have mechanical effects within the game. But it is a lot of talking to each other saying, hey, if I go here and you don't attack me there, then we can go over and gang up on him. And these alliances do change throughout the game. It's sort of meant to be that way. It's kind of a diplomacy light type of thing. In that situation, it may be okay to say, okay, you and I have been working together this entire game. I am not going to win, but I was close and you've shown me loyalty throughout this game. So I'm going to do what I can to make sure you win. To me, that feels like an okay thing to do. Games that require a lot of social interaction and that kind of thing, I think that it kind of gives you an okay to kingmake your ally.
It feels almost like a team
right
effort at that point, more than a kingmaking situation. Yeah. Like, it feels like you're working together. Like, you're getting a little part of their win.
Now, there's a huge asterisk next to this. It is okay if there's a team, as long as the other team isn't a team of one. So if there's three of us and Kitty and I are ganging up on Josh, then I make Kitty the winner, like usual. That is not okay, because now I've been essentially just helping you along all the time.
Yeah.
But if Josh and Sydney have been working together and the two of us have been working together, and now I have a chance of either getting a few more points for myself and coming in third as opposed to fourth, or getting you over the line to get to first, that's a decision I think is a valid decision to say, you know something, I've been working with you this entire time. It didn't work out for me, but part of my end alliance is I'm going to fall on my sword and give you those extra victory points you need to pull ahead.
Very in the theme for Rising Sun.
It is the theme for Rising Sun.
However, it is also why I hate negotiation games. I hate being in that situation. And I think a lot of these things are not my favorite kind of games to play because of these situations. And I really hate games with too much of a social aspect, because I do feel like it can hold over after the game.
Yeah.
And that's why I really prefer games where there's always a best move for me.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. And
so that's my thought.
Yeah. And that's probably like the, you know, final word is, if you don't like that aspect of things like kingmakers in general, avoid those games that really bring that out. Every game, I don't want to say every game, many games can be susceptible to this. Some games are far more susceptible to this than others. So when you know that those games, you find out you just don't like them. You know, Game of Thrones area control board game that came out years ago, I will never play that game. It is the worst game ever. I've played it once, and it's just such a gang up, you know, it's a horrible, horrible game for me. Some people love it.
But other people love it, love it, love it.
So I just don't play that game. Also, a word of friendliness to Rising Sun. It's very interesting because you can add the social aspect in there. And in the rules, it has little blurbs of ways of encouraging you to do it. But it's also 100% mechanical, in that you never have to do any of that negotiation aspects of it. And the game plays perfectly fine. It's how I've played it. All the times I've played it, I've played it that way. So you can trade money and pay people to make moves. It's like, oh, if you go here, I'll give you 2 money or something like that. we've tried it a couple times. It just doesn't really resonate with our group. So we just play it straight. And, you know, we make our alliances.
That still works?
Yeah. We make our alliances at the very, very beginning of each round. There's three rounds. At the very beginning of each round, you can decide to have alliances with people. And those alliances have mechanical benefits. So if I'm in an alliance with you, you also get, you know, the selection action benefit, which is great. But typically what we end up doing is if we're doing a four-player game, we'll each ally with one other player once in three rounds. You know, so it's just kind of worked out like that way in our group, and we enjoy playing that way. So Rising Sun is not a game that is easily a king-making game either. There's a lot going on where you really can't do that. I just wanted to say that because it is a great game. Go play it if you haven't. All right. I think we've covered more than I thought we could cover on this topic.
We always do.
I know. It's just the whole talking is so much fun.
And then we're going to get feedback about things I never would have thought of. So bring it, guys.
Yeah.
Can't wait to hear it.
Yep. All right. So, and this is so, let's see. Next week, we will be doing the topic. I'll be talking with Josh. And we have a new rule. So when I do an episode with Kitty, Josh has to listen to the episode before his episode so that he can comment on any feedback. So if you guys want to know what Josh thinks about kingmaking, email us or, you know, put something on BGG, and Josh will have to answer those questions in the next episode and vice versa. So we'll go back and forth with that. At least that's our goal. We'll see how long that holds. So in the meantime, let's see, how do we end this? You can follow us on Facebook at @TabletopGameTalkPodcast. You can follow us at Twitter at @TabletopGameTLK. I'm at Game Master Chris. You can leave us an iTunes review. I check those about every month. So if I see a new one, I will absolutely mention you here and thank you and all that stuff. Don't forget, you can follow us on, not follow us, but patron us on Patreon at TabletopGameTalk.com/Patreon. That's Patreon. If you are a patron, you're automatically entered into all of our contests. That's how Michael Ohl won. He didn't email us an entry. He was a patron. But you also get your entries for emailing as well. And on that note, I'm going to make Kitty say the rest of this stuff.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, the SGC, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Faz Flintham, Sean Peck, Toby Kraft, Eric Slander, Adam Kriblas, Mike Smith, and Christine Meyer. Until next week when we talk about dueling games. Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. All right, so this is the first episode that we have been a day late in 93 episodes.
And it's all my fault.
Just because you didn't bring your microphone.
Oh, I forgot so much stuff this weekend.
That's all right. I was totally unprepared as well. So you're like, good. Okay, we're going to be late. Yeah. But you should listen. I recorded a little thing on Memorial Day, so you should listen to that.